patterns and knowledge that was generated off the back of public funding and public scientists. I think really with this deal, one has to, you know, take a long, hard look at how multilateralism at the WTO is actually failing us. It's a very warped multilateralism, but also that TRIPS is no longer fit for purpose. The TRIPS agreement on intellectual property for medicines and medical technologies is not fit for purpose, because this is the way in which we are interpreting it, and this is the way in which we are dealing with it in the middle of a pandemic. It doesn't bode well for what's to come next.
Mihir, could you also respond to what the pharmaceutical industry said, namely that the main problem is one of distribution and enabling vaccinations to be administered in the developing world, that there are doses, but there are problems with distribution and actual vaccination, number one. And then, is the main issue now, as Fatima has also said, the main issue at the moment is enabling access to treatments and diagnostics for the developing world?
Yeah, so I would agree that, you know, the industry is crying crocodile tears here by raising a fear, you know, concerning this particular decision, which I'm sure they're aware won't do nearly what they claim it will do. Insofar as the supply and distribution concerns are concerned, I think Fatima's right that, you know, it's a question of timing and adequacy, you know, and the capability of rapid deployment, you know, some of which perhaps have to do with distributional concerns, but, you know, are still at the core a question of, you know, whether we have enough and then whether that can be, you know, moved around adequately, much of which is protected or prevented, rather, I should say, by intellectual property barriers. So, you know, what we've seen, you know, over the course of the last 18 months is that, you know, these barriers have inhibited companies in the global south who are perfectly willing and capable of producing these vaccinations to actually do so. And you know, especially early on, you know, in the first year or so of vaccination, we saw massive shortfalls that have now led to huge amounts of global inequity. So, you know, in general, I think, you know, this is, of course, still an ongoing question, and the fact that it's very likely that we'll be needing boosters on an ongoing basis, you know, makes it even more urgent. And at the moment, it's correct, I think, that to say that treatments are, you know, one of the most pressing issues with respect to access. And that's because, you know, most of the effective treatments are under intellectual property control by just a few corporations, and there is, you know, for the time being, at least this year, no major supply available through anyone besides those originator companies, and even that which is available through those companies is in very limited stock and purchased mostly by high income countries. So, you know, unfortunately, we're just making the same mistakes over and over again. The same mistakes we made with vaccines and access to vaccines early on in the pandemic is the same mistake we're making with treatments right now.
Let me ask Fatima Hassan in South Africa, is the pandemic ending?
Not from where we're sitting, no.
And Mihir Mankad, with Doctors Without Borders, you have this global perspective. What do you see right now?
No, I don't think we're in a position to claim that the pandemic's ending, and you know, neither that WHO has also not indicated that the pandemic is ending anytime soon.
And finally, Fatima, what do you think would be the single most important action could be taken right now to deal with this ongoing pandemic?
So, unfortunately, because we have this weak deal, I think the single pressing thing that needs to happen is that every single country in the global south has to start issuing compulsory licenses, but not just on vaccines, also on treatments and on diagnostics, because they are ordinarily permitted to do that under the TRIPS agreement. So if we don't have strong domestic action or strong domesticating
of this very
weak deal, we won't be able to get out of this pandemic.
Fatima Hassan, we want to thank you for being with us. Health Justice Initiative, speaking to us from South Africa. And Mihir Mankad with Doctors Without Borders, or MSF, speaking to us from New York City. And that does it for our broadcast. Democracy Now! Is produced with Renee Feltz, Mike Burke, Masaya Rhodes, Maria Tarasena. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh.
And Amanda Smith from Nashville, Tennessee.
Keep it right here on WRCT Pittsburgh.
Everybody ready?
Everybody, you ready for whiskey before breakfast?
I sure hope I am. We've got a wild show for you today. I am Amanda Richard. Thank you so much for tuning in to WRCT Pittsburgh, WVUD and WVUD HD1 Newark, Delaware, WUTC and WUTC HD1 Chattanooga, Tennessee, WKYWLP Mountain Streams Radio from Kaiser, West Virginia, or Tube City Online Radio from McKeesport, Pennsylvania. As I said, we've got quite the show for you today. We'll start off like we usually do on the liquored up side of the family. Then we'll have a conversation with Mark Tamsula and Richard Withers and even Dave Christie about their new record, Neighbors in the Cloudland. And then we'll have more great music. And we'll close down with a gospel set like we usually do. Let's get the proceedings started, shall we? Here comes Town Mountain with Whiskey with Tears right here on Whiskey Before Breakfast.
Well, I walked down the street, so cold and alone. Turned into the bar, man, it's my new second home. Nowhere to go, so I'll come here each night. And then my new favorite drink, where the mix is just right. I'll have a whiskey with tears, please, Mr. Bartender. Think back on the gears, stare at the bar. Get around on my fears, left with my hurt. I'll drink my whiskey with tears when I'm on the rocks. Chair. Ain't got no back or no arms. I hear the tick of the clock. Sets on the shelf. The dog is counting the hours. I sit here all by myself. Another whiskey with tears, please, Mr. Bartender. I bank it back on the gear. Best friend, Lord, and it's so nice to see. Oh, how you fill up my glass. Oh, when you listen to me, pour me one more and pay for it all. Another clock on the shelf says that it's time for last call. One more whiskey with tears, please, Mr. Bartender. Back on the gears, stare at the clock. Get around on my fears, living without her. I drink my whiskey with tears when I'm on the rocks. Good Lord, I drink my whiskey with tears when I'm on the rocks.
The other night when I come home,
the drunk I could not see. I got tangled up in the old doormat, fell flat as I could be. And I had me a little old bottle of rum, and I didn't have any more. And the cap flew off when I fell down, and it spilled it on the floor. Then the rat come out from his hiding place, and he got that whiskey scent. Well, he ran right up, and he got a little shot, and back to his hole he went. Right back to his hole he went, right back to his hole he went. Well, he ran right up, and he got a little shot, and back to his hole he went. Then the rat come out from his hole once more, sidled up to the gin on the floor. He was a little bit shy, but he winked one eye, and he got him a little bit more. And he didn't go back to his hole that time, but he stayed by the puddle of gin. And he says, doggone my pop-eyed soul, I'm gonna get drunk again. And he washed his face with his front feet, and on his hind legs sat with a twisted smile and a half-closed eye. Says, where's that doggone cat? And he didn't go back to his hole. He said, doggone my soul, I'm only a rat, but a doggone cat can run me back to my hole. His little old eyes begin to shine, and he lapped up more and more. And it made me glad that I had stumbled and spilled it in the floor. But soon the puddle of rum was gone, and I didn't have any more gin. And the little old rat was having a time, and the old tomcat come in. Well, the cat made a pass, and the rat made a dash, and his boldness faded thin. The cat jumped over, and the rat got sober, and back to his hole again. Ran back to his hole again, ran back to his hole again. Well, the cat jumped over and the rat got sober, ran back to his hole again.
I'll be here to hear what's on your mind.
As an adult, kids want to know you're listening to them, but they also want to listen to you. When it comes to alcohol, they want to know your expectations and how and why to avoid underage drinking. Talking early and often about it in everyday conversations reinforces your message and keeps lines of communication open. For more information, visit underagedrinking.samhsa.gov.
I'll be by your side.
Hey everyone, it's Greg Ruby, and you are listening to Whiskey Before Breakfast with Mando Richard. How was that?
pitcher of beer and two fifths of rum. Drink, 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 baby, that's all you do. I'm gonna have to put you down, cause you drank too much booze. When the party ended, she says, Daddy, didn't we have fun? But you'd better buy me another fifth, cause I have just begun. I thought that chick was stagger, but she didn't even bat her eye. Now she can beg more than a camel can, and still say she ain't high. Drink, 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 baby, that's all you do. I'm gonna have to put you down, cause you drink too much.
Listen to Mary Z. Cox play a medley of Fisher's Hornpipe and Chinkapin Huntin' from her 2015 record Blue Sky Banjo. Let me tell you about the opening set of music, our Liquored Up set, here on Whiskey Before Breakfast. Back at the beginning of the set, Town Mountain gave us Whiskey with Tears from their 2016 record Southern Crescent. Then, from back in 1962, the new Lost City Ramblers gave us The Intoxicated Rat. From their American Moonshine and Prohibition Songs record, which, as I said, came out in 1962. Then after the PSA, we heard Nadine Landry and Stephen Sammy Lind doing Parlez-nous au bois, a great Cajun drinking song from their 2010 record Granddad's Favorite. And the last song on the set was from Jimmy Rainey and Slim Slaughter, You Drink Too Much Booze. I played that from that compilation I dip into from time to time called Cheap Old Wine and Whiskey. Before we get to our interview with Mark Tamsul and Richard Withers, I've got one track I want to make sure I play for you. And this is a track from Ferris and Jason Romero's brand new record, Tell 'Em You Were Gold. And here we go, Ferris and Jason Romero doing Cannot Change It All right here on Whiskey Before Breakfast.
Mm-hmm. change it all to what he does in me, does in me. I went up on the mountaintop and looked down on the land, stranger to my own dear home, for years I've been
You're listening to the Square Peg Rounders play Turkey in the Straw as the musical bed while I chat with you for a couple of minutes. The last thing you heard was a track from Farris and Jason Romero's brand new record, Tell 'Em You Were Gold. It was Cannot Change It All. For me, it's always great news to hear that Farris and Jason Romero have put out another new record. And speaking of new records, it's always great news when I hear that Mark Tamsula and Richard Withers have put out another record. And they have just released the sixth in their series of records in which they play the old-time music of southwestern Pennsylvania, mostly as collected by Samuel Bayard. Recently, I sat down on the Withers family porch with them, and we had a great conversation. They played a few tunes for us, and I'd like to share that with you all now, right here on Whiskey Before Breakfast.
Ladies and gentlemen, joining us today on Whiskey Before Breakfast, we've got Mark Tamsula on the fiddle, Richard Withers on the banjo, Dave Christie on the guitar, and Barb Rosner on the bass. And they're going to be playing and chatting with us about Mark and Richard and Dave's new record, Neighbors in the Cloudland. What's up first, guys?
Susan, lick the ladle.
Where did that tune come from?
That came from a Fayette County fiddler named Frank Lowry. He was part of the collection process. Samuel Bayard was involved, and this was published in the first of his books, Hill Country Tunes. Sam was visiting fiddlers between the 1920s and 1960s in southwestern Pennsylvania.
This is the sixth record that you guys have put out, celebrating the music of southwestern Pennsylvania. I love the quote you've got on the back of your CD. To bring out the finest side of our early generations, our neighbors on the cloudland, is a duty which no cultivated person living along the entire chain of the Allegheny Range in Pennsylvania can shirk. That's from Henry Shoemaker, who, you think his commentary inspired Sam Bayer to do his collecting?
Might well have. Shoemaker was a generation before Bayard. He didn't collect as much music. He went through Pennsylvania, a lot in central Pennsylvania, collected all kinds of stories, a lot of ballads. Unfortunately, he didn't write down the music, just put down the lyrics. But I know Bayard had studied under a Kitteridge, who was a well-known ethnologist, ethnomusicologist about that same era as Shoemaker. He was going to go to the British Isles, and he was going to collect music there. But spending some time on his uncle's farm near California, Pennsylvania, he heard some music locally, and that really changed his direction. And so he traveled throughout southwestern Pennsylvania, some into central Pennsylvania, northern West Virginia, but collecting these tunes that we're playing. They're collected over 1,000 fiddle tunes, a lot of fife tunes. This area was really rich with a fifing tradition going back to the Revolutionary War, and a number of ballads.
Barb Rosner, who's playing bass, suggested a great question. For this record, Mark, Neighbors in the Cloudland, how did you choose this set of tunes?
We've been surveying the tunes in the collections, and I mentioned Hill Country Tunes. The larger of the books was Dance to the Fiddle, March to the Fife. We started to come across tunes we liked a lot, and I began to realize well, many of them are coming from the same fiddler, from the same source. And so that began to redirect me to search out which other tunes came coming from the same fiddlers. One of my favorite fiddlers of the group, Samuel Walsh, he was actually from Juniata, not really southwestern Pennsylvania, but he must have been close to Byard when Byard was at State College. Emery Martin from Dunbar was another one. A couple of our albums, our first album was Up in the Batten House, and that was a tune from Emery Martin, and so was Up Jump Joe in the Middle of It.
It sounds like you're saying, I liked these tunes and songs.
Yeah.
The album before, the Rural Valley Melodies, we had really focused on a certain region,
right.
And there was just some interest in that area and particular fiddlers. Armstrong County, and sort of more north of Pittsburgh. This one goes back. This one's a little more from all over, and a lot of it is just going through and finding tunes we liked and featuring them.
Why is this effort of trying to preserve some of the music that was alive and well in southwestern Pennsylvania and the late 19th and early 20th centuries, why is that still important today?
I'd say it's a region that hasn't really been associated with Appalachian music, kind of a neglected area. If Byard hadn't gone through and collected these tunes, I think he realized this too, that there had been interest in, for probably a good generation there, of music from southern Appalachian areas. And that had been much more well established. This region, rich in music, but just not associated with the same kinds of tunes, and not associated as a musical area. And I think he recognized that if he didn't go through and collect this stuff, it was probably going to be gone. Some of the traditions, south of Pennsylvania, have been carried on more. The Pennsylvania tradition, as far as we know, really kind of died out after the generation that Byard recorded passed on. And newer players just weren't picking up this music. They were playing bluegrass, they were playing music that was recorded, and the stuff that their grandfathers and aunts and uncles played, they just didn't recognize as valuable. So it's a good thing that he recorded this stuff. Most of it early on, this started in the late 20s, so he didn't have access to recording equipment. He and was traveling in very remote areas, so he really had to hitchhike around, go by foot to places, and so he recorded it all in musical notation. And that may be one of the reasons too that it's been dormant for a while. So the collection has been sitting there since the 80s, and there have been musicians that have recorded things from it. I think it's a known collection, but as far as we know, anybody going through and really presenting it in some kind of accessible way just hasn't been done.
We're talking with Richard Withers and Mark Tamsula, and watching us talk is Dave Christie, and over there on the far side of the porch is Barb Rosner. And we're talking about their new record, Neighbors in the Cloudland, old-time music of southwestern Pennsylvania, the sixth in the series of records that Mark and Richard have put out. One of the things before we started we were talking about was the origins of the music being brought over from the other side of the Atlantic. You were saying mostly Northern Ireland?
In this area, yeah, there was a heavy Northern Irish influence. Scots Irish, so this is generations that have been displaced, moved to Northern Ireland and then moved on here. And a lot of people from Northern England as well settled. Also kind of mixed with, as far as European settlers go, mixed with a lot of Germans who were obviously settled in large parts of Pennsylvania. But the music that we're playing is really heavily influenced by the Scots-Irish and English tradition.
Mark, why is it important to you to keep this tradition alive, to preserve this and play it for people and record it?
It's an opportunity that presented itself to us. We found these tunes. We found ourselves enjoying us and being able to play as a group. You know, without that, these tunes would just be disappearing for good. We're not hearing them. So many tunes you might think of in the general Appalachian style, you recognize them everywhere. You can go to Kentucky or South Carolina, and you can hear versions of Soldier's Joy and whatever. There's so many of those. But we're finding that these tunes, they're unique. There's many melodies here in this Pennsylvania set that I don't recognize anywhere else. They're not just renamed and rehashed. They're unique. And so once people stop playing them, they're gone.
None of these source fiddlers that Sam Byard notated, none of them have recorded, have they?
In the 40s, he had access to a wire recorder and...
Reel-to-reel,
okay. Yeah. He does have plenty of recordings that he made, but the first couple of decades he did not record, and a lot of those people died out. He was going around to some pretty elderly musicians at that point.
There was an earlier project with the Library of Congress, I think it was back in the 30s, Sidney Robertson recorded a couple of tracks of Tink Queer, Westmoreland County fiddler. So those are can be found through the Library of Congress, but it wasn't a commercial recording.
Do you all have another tune you want to play for us?
We have a medley, and the first one comes from Walter Ireland. It's called Camptown Hornpipe. Walter Ireland was a Greene County fiddler who's left-handed. The second tune is a version of Sally Goodwin from Marion Yoders, who was a fiddler and fifer from Fayette County.
All right, here come Mark Tamsul on the fiddle, Richard Withers on the banjo, Dave Christie on the guitar, and Barb Rosner on the bass. Thank you. Camptown Hornpipe, and then Sally Goodwin. First one sounded a little bit familiar, Mark.
It sounds like another tune that we play, the Wash and White.
Oh, yeah. One of the other baritones, yeah. Kind of. It doesn't remind me of any popular tunes out there.
It is interesting because he did, and he organized somewhat by tune types, and I know he had theories about families of tunes. So in the Dance to the Fiddle, March to the Fife, some of them are organized just according to melodic similarities to them, and I think this one might be similar to the one you mentioned there that we did earlier. It might be put together in the same area of the book.
A lot of this music came into this part of Pennsylvania as people travel here with, as you said, with their fiddles or their fifes. And I think an awful lot of it was used for dances, wasn't it?
Yeah. This is all pretty much all dance music. Unfortunately, Byard didn't really focus on the dances. I mean, there was dancing throughout America from earliest times here. But we don't know exactly what kinds of dances might have been unique to Pennsylvania. There are a lot of the collection is in 6/8 time, and we've recorded some of them. One of the recordings we did, which was really kind of more featuring the more Irish Scottish sounding tunes, recorded a lot more of the jigs. I don't think he calls any of them jigs, or very rarely, unless they were directly from an Irish player, but a lot of them were called quadrilles. Clearly it would have been, some kind of square dance. The 6/8 time is something that may be unique to the Pennsylvania collection, or at least as it was preserved here. I suspect that there probably was, jigs played throughout America. It seems like this was an area where they lasted longer and remained active as, part of the common repertoire for a longer period of time.
While Richard was talking, Mark, I saw you consulting your portable information device.
I have a list. I made a database.
Fact-checking. He's correcting everything I said.
No, when you said that the tune sounded familiar, I wanted to see if Byard had more to say in the credits. And that was originally like a nameless tune. It's listed as just an old reel from Walter Ireland, but he draws comparisons to other tunes that he had collected, and he referenced the Camptown Hornpipe title.
One of the things that was important about what Sam Baird was doing with the tunes he was collecting was trying to grab a snapshot of what the music was like before radio ruined everything, because radio homogenized. I mean, before you knew it, you had saxophones and clarinets and trumpets and cowboy music, thanks to radio stations broadcasting across the U.S. of A.
Yeah, he saw it coming. Byard started his project in 1928, and in 1926, the first country music record on 78 was commercially produced. So he just looked ahead. He said, if he didn't get busy and preserve this stuff, it was just going to fall by the wayside. Live music, getting people to play live in their families or in their communities, was going to get replaced by the jukebox and the radio. Or people were, the musicians themselves would just get motivated to play like somebody that they heard from Texas or New York, rather than from their uncle who played his funky style.
the other people that playing music in your community who are just, coal miners and farmers who are playing in their part-time, yeah, they're not going to sound as impressive. And so naturally people are going to, gravitates towards learning, from the professional musicians. I mean, having said that, there were some, hearing some of Byard's recordings, the field recordings, there's some very impressive musicians there. But yeah, he knew that that was going to homogenize and the local repertoires are going to be lost.
You mentioned this is community music, but how this music is accessible. I mean, I think that's one of the appeals still today of old-time music. It is accessible, and it is playable by lots of different kinds of people.
Yeah, it takes years to, I mean, I've been working at this years and years and, you know, still trying to get better. But it's a kind of music that you can start, beginners can start in and enjoy and pick up tunes and in a community setting. And, you know, it's much more accessible than something that has a lot more formal training involved. And
One of the things that I think you said earlier, Mark, was that you're interested, or maybe it was on the liner notes, you're interested in getting other people to learn some of these tunes from southwestern Pennsylvania and get them, not just listening to them and buying recordings like your new album, Neighbors in the Cloudland, but actually playing the tunes.
That's how the tunes stay alive, you know. The other music that's getting out there, it's not just up to one person to perform it or record it. It takes, you know, tunes to get to become popular. You know, we go to old-time festivals a lot. Lots of people jamming, and mostly they're playing stuff that they've just heard on some new recording, some new release, and tunes get around and circulate, and then at least for a time, tunes like that, they're surviving, they're thriving again.
Yeah, this isn't just a historical project of preserving how it was. I mean, this is really putting tunes back into circulation in a very vibrant, active, you know, old-time community.
I know in the Scottish fiddle tradition, there's both the tradition of preserving the tradition and extending it. A good Scottish fiddler not only plays the old tunes, but is also expected to make up new tunes that sound like they're part of the tradition. And I suspect that's possible with music like this. You're preserving the tradition, presenting it to people, and maybe it'll give them some ideas for either new tunes to play or different directions to take.
I've tried writing a few, and I don't find that particularly satisfying. I think at some point I eventually realized, oh, I thought I wrote this, but it was an old tune that I used to know and forgot. There's so many good tunes coming to us by way of these collections.
That's true, but that's part of the tradition, too. Somebody made up all these tunes. Yeah, and people are putting together new tunes, and I'm not even sure exactly how you can hear what's in the tradition and what seems to be diverging from it. We've actually recorded a couple of original things that we've done, but yeah, we're mostly focused on the ones that are out there.
Even for people who want to make up their own music in this tradition, it's fantastic to have this starting place of this is what was there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the tunes, I mean, not just in the, you know, our Pennsylvania tradition, but anywhere. I mean, these are heirlooms. I mean, this is something that we play and enjoy, and it's something that we're really into now, and people enjoy it now. But there's also this satisfaction of knowing that this has been handed down, and we're connected with people generations before. You know, the tunes no doubt have evolved over time. Certainly evolved since coming over from some of the European settlers. You know, we're connected here with the past and playing something.
Did you want to go get a different banjo that's inside being protected from the elements?
Yes, I'll be right back.
You're going to have to come back and do a whole new session just with Dave.
Richard and Mark, they came up with this this concept of these recordings, and I appreciate what they've done, and I don't hear Mark and Richard talk enough about how they came to this, because that's what the old time fiddlers did before there was your tape recorder here that has a real nice red light on it. The human brain did that. Grandma, grandpap sang tunes, and where did they get them? They recorded them in their brain. They were very sensitive, and maybe that's what Sam Baird saw in the fiddlers. It's like these people are recording these songs that have been around, and they made up some new ones, or they didn't realize it. The names have changed, just like the melodies have changed a little bit, because everybody might have heard them differently or started to like something that they put into it. Then when you guys came or started to come around with these recording devices, then everybody wanted, yeah, that's how that was played. But then some fiddlers and banjo players and fifers and flutists started to say, yeah, but you know what? Grandpap didn't play it exactly like that. You know what? I like the way my grandpap played that. And it's nice that Richard and Mark are bringing it alive, saying why it's important and proving it by playing it, making it sound purdy.
The next album will be tunes focused on dance medleys and jam, good jam tunes, and Barb will be, the four of us will be recording that one.
That's Barb Rosner on the bass, and Dave Christie on the guitar. He's tuning, very important. And Richard over there on the banjos, and yes. You, Mark, on the fiddle. Wow, so you've already, this record just came out and you're already planning the next one.
Yeah, we've been planning it for a while.
This is the first I've heard about it.
No. The banjo player is always the last one to know, right? Well, you went into the house and got a different banjo. What did you bring out?
Well, this is an older style of banjo. We just call it the tack head banjo. It's very simple with a skin head tacked onto a wooden hoop. And I have some, they're not gut strings, but they're nylon strings that sound very much like, it gives it the old sound. You know, I kept talking about European and British Isle settlers coming here. Obviously African-American influence of the banjo in particular had a huge formative part of what we call Appalachian music, and the rhythm of the banjo changed how you perform some of the tunes. As far as we know, there wasn't a big African-American presence here in western Pennsylvania until after the Great Migration. And so the rural music that Byard's collecting didn't seem to be directly influenced by African-Americans or Native Americans, as far as we can tell from Byard's collection. But certainly the banjo, you know, brings in an element of a very different cultural element. This one, again, is this is kind of what a banjo in the 19th century, this is probably what you would have gotten or had somebody make for you if you were playing the banjo.
And you've got it tuned down an octave so it sounds like a cello banjo.
Right.
Cool. When did the banjo start showing up in western Pennsylvania traditional music?
Byard doesn't mention them very much. He the fiddle and fife were dominant instruments. And I was kind of under the impression reading Byard that maybe there wasn't much of a presence. But we've come across a number of photographs of musicians from, you know, the very early 20th century.
Okay.
And there were plenty of banjos. So at least then, late 19th century and early 20th century.
All right, well, Mark Tamsula on the fiddle and Richard Withers on the banjo and Dave Christie on the guitar and Bob Rosner on the bass, thank you so much for spending some time with us here on Whiskey Before Breakfast. And that's not the tune you're going to play, is it?
No, we're going to play Hopple's Reel from a fiddler named Chris Hopple. He had passed away prior to the period when Byard was collecting. But Samuel Losh, one of the contributors, learned quite a few tunes from his neighbor, Chris Hopple. And that's what we've got is Hopple's Reel.
All right.
Why don't you just start it off? Thank you.
Thanks again, Mark Tamsula, Richard Withers, Dave Christie, and Barb Rosner. And Richard and Mark and Dave's new record, Neighbors in the Cloudland, is available wherever you find independent music. We'll be back for the second half of Whiskey Before Breakfast right after this station break.
You are listening to Whiskey Before Breakfast on WRCT Pittsburgh, WVUD and WVUD HD1 Newark, Delaware, WUTC and WUTC HD1 Chattanooga, Tennessee, WKYWLP Kaiser, West Virginia, or Tube City Online Radio from McKeesport, Pennsylvania at WMCK.FM.
Considering an online pharmacy? Explore BeSafeRx to find useful information and resources to help you purchase medicines safely online. A safe online pharmacy requires a doctor's prescription, has an address in the United States, has a licensed pharmacist, and is licensed by a state pharmacy board. It's best to stay away from online pharmacies that don't meet these criteria. Discover more helpful tips and resources at BeSafeRx. Go to fda.gov/BeSafeRx.
Hey there, it's the Mockster from WRCT's own Friday night extravaganza, Viva La Mock, reminding you that you're listening to Whiskey Before Breakfast with my good friend, Mando Richard. But then again, unless you're a first-time listener, you probably already knew what you're listening to, right? Huh? Right? And if not, maybe, just maybe, you've had a little too much Whiskey Before Breakfast, if you know what I mean.
Spack Brothers Pizza joins you in supporting WRCT Pittsburgh. Spack Brothers Pizza offers pizza, hoagies, and wings while specializing in vegan and vegetarian alternatives. Spack Brothers Pizza uses no refined sugars in its sauce and unbleached flour in its dough. Spack Brothers is committed to safety during the ongoing pandemic, and they provide online ordering and payment, as well as contact-free pickup. You can learn more about online ordering at their website, www.spackbrothers.com. and you will receive a text message when your food is ready for pickup. For more information, call 412-362-SPAK or visit their website at spackbrothers.com. That's 412-362-7725 or spakbrothers.com. If you are interested in underwriting for WRCT, you can email pr@wrct.org for more information about promotional exchanges and other partnership opportunities.
Hi, this is DJ Firefly with a message for Richard Whiskey Folk listeners. I invite you to tune in for my show, Couch Dancing. I've got guitars, violins, hand drums, oud, vocal harmonies, and all the irreverent silliness you've come to expect from WRCT. Catch it Wednesdays at 3 p.m. After all that breakfast whiskey, it should sound pretty good.
Papa, why can't we telegraph while riding a horse?
Son, there ain't no one to blame but Jeffro. He was riding old Betsy the Stallion, tip-tapping away at his telegraph, when blam, ran right into the side of the saloon.
Well, if Jeffro can't do it, neither should you. Don't text and drive.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
Hey, after Whiskey Before Breakfast gets done at 1 o'clock, don't forget to stay tuned to WRCT Pittsburgh for the Black Diamond Show, an hour of bluegrass music. We're going to start off the second part of Whiskey Before Breakfast today with the Mostyns doing Make Me a Pallet on Your Floor.
Down.